Hello, friends. Before we get started here, I just wanted to give you a heads up on this episode. The audio quality at various times in this episode is not quite up to the level that we always strive to achieve, and we wanted to apologize for that before we get started. I've been fighting off a cold, which you can probably still tell. Plus, we had a couple of unusual technical glitches. You'll hear that for just a couple of minutes. That's at around the 8-minute mark into the show. We've tried to clean it up as much as possible. Thanks for bearing with us, and as always, thanks for being a devoted listener to Entertainment 2.0. Welcome to episode 396 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is a show where we talk about Microsoft entertainment technology that includes audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms.
All righty, Richard. We are, you know, at the end of the show, we always talk about how we want people to be here for when we record the show live. But did we also say that it might not always be on Tuesdays, and for the second week in a row, and it's my fault both times, we're on Wednesdays. That's all right. That just gives us a little bit more time to cultivate the news, right?
Cultivate? Yeah. Are we cultivating it? Are we somehow, like, I don't know, what would you call that? Fertilizing the... No, let's not do that.
Maybe not that. Let's not fertilize it. Maybe we should just avoid this train of thought entirely and go straight to some listener feedback.
Good idea.
We got a lovely message from Joe. He says, "Hey guys, it's Joe, close friend of the show." Well, I feel that way, even if Josh and Richard do not.
Aww.
You're all close friends, even if we don't know your names or anything about you. We still consider you close friends. Because we know you're smart, because you listen to us. So anyway.
Well, and Joe's someone who interacts with us quite a lot on Twitter. So
he does.
We totally relate to this guy.
Yep. So he continues with, "While enjoying last week's podcast, Josh was wondering about the fate of the show, The Good Place. I have included a link to a Twitter account called The Cancel Bear, which tracks if shows are likely to return for another season. This posting, which comments on The Good Place, indicates that it probably did just well enough to get a second season." So he gives us a link. We'll, of course, include this Cancel Bear Twitter account and status in the show notes for all of you to follow so that you can keep up with your shows and whether or not they're going to be renewed. He says, "The Cancel Bear is pretty good at guessing what will happen to almost all network shows. In the spring, the bear posts more, since the networks are making announcements of renewals and cancellations." I went on and checked out this site, and it looks like most shows get renewed around May, which, or at least announced by then, if they're going to be whacked or renewed.
Right.
So I didn't actually realize that, but it's good to know.
Yeah, it's kind of rare that something gets picked up or knocked off early. That's usually an excessively good or an excessively bad sign. These decisions often get held out until oftentimes when the last episodes of the season, or maybe even just after them, have been aired. If this is what I think it is, this is associated with the Cancel Renew Index, which is a long time kind of started as part of the Zaptuit blog. And the Cancel Renew Index is kind of my go-to for wondering how something is going. He's right, incredibly accurate and surprisingly good at predicting how things are going to go. And they include a whole lot more than just the typical Nielsen numbers that you might expect drive these things.
So breaking news here, Richard. First off, you're right. This is
wait a minute. Why is that breaking news? I'm a little bit concerned about that.
That is regular weekly news. You are almost always right, my friend. The breaking news here is that they have a new post on this site. You're right. It's on Zapduit. New numbers for NBC shows. And The Good Place, they show as renewed. Yay.
All right.
Yeah.
That is breaking news. That's good. Glad to hear it for you, because this is a show that you like.
Yeah. It's not too often that I watch comedy, so I'm glad to see it's getting a second season.
Yeah. That's a great recommendation, Joe. Thanks for bringing that to our and to our listeners' attention. That's a fantastic resource.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, that does it for our feedback. If you would like to be a close friend of the show like Joe, you can shoot us a message at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. That'll take us right into our news this week. We've got a little bit of video news, including some Plex stuff like usual. But first, we're going to start with an app for you Windows people out there, which is probably just about all of you, but more specifically for you British Windows people. There is an app that I would bet a lot of our British listeners know of called TV Player. It's an app that's on a lot of platforms like iOS and Android and things like that. Well, there's a new app from TV Player that's now available on Windows 10. And since it's a UWP, it's available on Windows 10 on the desktop and on Windows 10 mobile for the 5 or 6 of you left out there that are still using that. It's, this app I had never even heard of, Richard, because I'm not British. So I did a little bit of research on this app, and it sounds like, if you're an American, it sounds like Hulu. Basically, it gives you what they like to call over there, catch-up TV, meaning you can watch episodes of TV shows that have already aired. But it also has some live TV options. Some of it is free, basically the stuff that you'd be able to get over the air. Most of that is free. Everything else you have to pay for £5.99 a month. And that includes a lot of cable channels. Like I saw Food Network on there, CNN, Comedy Central. A lot of stuff. So it sounds like a pretty awesome version of Hulu, and it's available on Windows 10 stuff. So that's really good to hear.
That is good to hear. I did not realize that this was UK-based, because I'm looking through this post and I'm trying to figure out, why do we need this? We have Hulu.
Well, right, because it is exactly like Hulu, it seems. Although, I don't think Hulu's ever had live TV, has it?
They don't have live TV, no. Now, one of the good things, though, is that on many of these platforms like Roku and Apple TV, we're starting to see the network's own apps start to integrate the live TV feeds, too. So that's kind of supplementing that, I think, for us anyway.
All right. So let's move on to our other big news, video news story of the week. And that is an acquisition by Plex. I don't remember Plex ever acquiring other companies before. It's probably happened, but I don't remember it happening.
Right.
Richard, tell us about this one.
This is surprising to me. I had the same reaction. I'm like, wait a minute. Plex is they're that big now that they are acquiring other companies. That's kind of amazing to me. I love that.
And awesome.
Yeah. So they have just acquired a company called WatchUp. And WatchUp is essentially a news, like a short form news video aggregator. They have apps that run on iOS, on Android, on the Fire TV, and on the Wii. And all of those kind of short videos from CBS News and CNN and CNET and Bloomberg and those types of things that you might catch all over the place, usually only accessible either through their websites or through their own apps, they're pulling them all together and putting them into a highly personalized feed based on algorithms of that look at what you watch and what you're interested in and things like that. So as I understand it, Plex is saying that they plan on integrating this sort of capability, this news aggregation, into Plex in the future somehow, that news is a big, important part of the television experience. And for people who are using Plex as a potential cord-cutting solution, it's something that they recognize is missing and important. So this is going to be, I guess, part of, or at least their initial solution for that. Now, here's what worries me. I feel like we're kind of creating this monster with all these different things that it does. Because I'm thinking, okay, well, we already have channels. How does this relate to channels? Does this have anything to do with channels? And then we have the DVR, which is different from channels. And then, of course, we have your own content of all these different types. And I worry, I really worry, because I feel like Plex has finally gotten to this equilibrium of great experience and amazing capabilities. And I worry that it's going to become a patchwork.
I had not thought about it from that standpoint, but it could be. I mean, even if you just have a bunch of libraries, it gets a little bit daunting to look at the interface, because like I reset up one of my Plex servers this weekend and I just let it put all of the default libraries in, and that made one for home videos and music and photos and all right. This stuff. And like previously I wasn't using any of those. And then I've also got playlists set up, which I should actually talk about. And all of a sudden I had a lot more things to choose from on that left hand
banana. Right.
So I could see that becoming a problem. I guess my first thought would be just stick this in channels, because that's where it seems like it would belong.
Yeah.
But they might not want to, they're probably not going to want to bury it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would agree that it probably belongs in channels, but it's different from channels in that channels is basically just pulling from feeds of content that those different sources provide. So this would be much more interactive. And I worry that we're going to end up with a situation where we kind of are right now with the DVR capability. And I realize we're still in beta and they haven't figured out how to integrate it everywhere yet. But DVR right now seems very much like an isolated add-on capability that is not in any other way really integrated with Plex.
Yeah, I would say that's true for the most part. I guess at this point, I'm just going to try to remain optimistic, because this does sound really, really awesome. Let me share with you how my thought process went when I heard about this. I first thought, I've never heard of this new service. It sounds really cool. I would like to use this service. You know where I really want it though? Where I really need it? My Xbox and my Windows PCs. Crap. I can't watch it on either of those places. Oh wait, it's going to be in Plex, and I have Plex in both of those places.
True.
Yeah, so I'm even more excited about this now. So yeah, hopefully they do this right, and I do have a fair amount of confidence in the Plex team that they will do this right. And they're a company that does take their time when integrating things, like we've seen with the DVR product, but normally when they do that, it ends up with an experience that we like.
Yep. Here's hoping they take their time to get the experience right.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to probably the category that we see the least amount of news from week in and week out, and that would be our audio category. But we do have a little bit of news this week here. Napster.
Remember
them?
Completely
redid. I do remember them. Not this version of Napster, because this is what used to be Rhapsody. Rhapsody bought Napster and then took their name, because for some reason they thought Napster was a better name than Rhapsody.
Right. So but Rhapsody, anyway, remember them?
I do remember Rhapsody. I think maybe more people remember actually using Rhapsody. So anyway, Napster / Rhapsody completely redid their Windows app. And when they did it, they made it a full-on Windows 10 UWP. So you've got a complete redesign that works on Windows 10 PCs and on Windows 10 mobile. I'm not sure that it's available on Xbox, though. I didn't think to check, and this article from Windows Central didn't mention it, but if it's UWP, it could be. But anyway, it's basically just a brand new version of the Napster app, and Napster is like most of these other music things now. You pay them a monthly subscription, you get to listen to a bunch of music. So the service is about what you would expect. And the UI from the screenshots is also about what I think you would probably expect. It looks a whole lot like Groove.
Which is a good thing, frankly. I mean, I think there's really only so far you can go in creating a music user interface. I might argue that Groove is probably one of the better ones for that platform. I'm not really all excited about Spotify integration, or the Spotify experience on that platform. And I think that many people have tried to build, for example, Sonos controllers, and they're kind of all over the place. So I like that this is keeping the experience kind of straightforward and simple and familiar.
Yeah, I think you make some good points there. So for all six of you out there who use Napster, let us know if you like this new version of the service. Seriously, does anybody use this? Do you know anybody, Richard, who uses this?
You know, we're joking about this a bit, and I feel bad for these companies. Rhapsody, in particular, in this case, Rhapsody is a company that has been in this space and has been doing basically on-demand music and music streaming for years before it was popularized. And then along come the big guys, first really led by Spotify, and then Microsoft and Google and Apple, each with their own offerings. And so some of the companies that started this, like Rhapsody, are no longer really relevant.
No, they really just kind of got beat out. I think most people are using Spotify, Google, or Apple at this point. And some people, especially our listeners, may be using Groove. But for the most part, I think it's pretty much just Spotify, Google, and Apple at this point. I know you and I are both Spotify users.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you, as a listener, are using Rhapsody, or Napster, as it's unfortunately called now, let us know. And let us know what it is that you like about it. Why are you sticking with it when there are so many competitors out there now? Does it have an edge that it just isn't getting the right attention for?
Yeah, absolutely. All right, some gaming news. And there's a few stories here, but they're all short. So don't tune out if you're not into the gaming stuff. All right, first up, we discussed last week that Microsoft made some changes to the way the Insider program works on the Xbox. Well, they kind of made a goof up here. They didn't explain it that way, but I think that's really what it is. So they completely changed the Insider program, and now it's, it used to be the Xbox preview thing. Now it's the Insider thing. Now it's got four rings. But when they did this, for the people that they were moving directly into that alpha ring, the one that's going to get like a bazillion updates a week, they looked at the users and said, some of these people have more than one Xbox. Let's just pick one. And we'll put the update on that one.
Just randomly.
Just kind of randomly.
Awesome.
Yeah. So I think that's kind of dumb, but they did rectify the situation pretty quickly. They released a new version of the Insider Hub app on the Xbox One. And if you're in this alpha ring, you can go into that app on any of your Xboxes and choose whether you want that Xbox to be in the alpha ring or not. And then within 72-ish hours, that change should take effect. So cool. They fixed that. They absolutely did the right thing in fixing this. But couldn't they have just looked at what consoles each user had in the preview prior to this changeover and just automatically put those ones into the alpha ring?
That would make sense.
Like, they still would have needed to do this so that people can more easily control which machines they want in the program and stuff. But it seems like they could have avoided some drama here by just looking at the boxes instead of just the user accounts. Anyway, you can now completely control this on your own, which is great. It's all done through your Xbox, which is great. And you can include any of your boxes where you're the main active user on them up to 10. Dude, if you have more than 10 Xboxes...
What the hell?
I think I'm kind of jealous of anybody
who has 10 Xboxes. Seriously, what the hell?
there must be somebody, right? Or else they probably wouldn't have this limit. Although this limit also annoys me because of the wording that they put around this. When they were explaining this limit and that if you're not active and all that stuff, that you could get dropped, they said you could get dropped to make room for others. To make room for others? What do you mean? You're just sending bits across the internet to our boxes. Why would there be a limited number of people that could be in the program?
Well, Josh, I think I need to explain to you, the internet is like the series of tubes. It's not a big truck.
Oh. So do some people have smaller tubes then?
You could clog it.
Oh, no. We don't want Xbox clogging the tubes.
Right.
Don't do that. Don't be greedy, people. If you have 10 Xboxes, don't be clogging the tubes. Share the love. All right. Thank you for clearing that up for me, Richard.
All right.
I learned something. All right. Richard, there just aren't enough custom versions of controllers for the Xbox out there. Obviously. So Microsoft has made two more. We've got a new one that's like this bluish, tealish, whatever color. They're calling it Ocean Shadow Special Edition. And another one that looks kind of, I actually think the other one is kind of cool looking. It's called Winter Forces Special Edition. It's like a snowy camouflage color. Do you like either of these?
I kind of like the bluish one, but didn't they have a game console that was this color? And so maybe this is just the controller that accompanied that console? Or am I missing something?
I think there was a console that looked similar to this color. I don't remember which one it was. Like maybe,
and neither
I think
do
it
I.
might have been one of the Gears of War bundles. It was the one that didn't look like it was covered in blood and like ripped to pieces. It was the not insane Xbox or Gears of War bundle.
In any event, I do like both of them, actually. I think they're kind of cool.
They are both kind of cool. And if you want either of them, you'll be able to get them at select retailers, whatever the heck that means. I'm going to guess that means most places that sell Xbox controllers. On February 7th, so you're only going to have to wait about a week, and you're going to have to pay a $10 premium for them. They're going to be $70 a piece instead of the normal $60, or instead of, you know, the normalish prices that you can normally find these things for, which is more in the $50 range. I got to wonder, if you're willing to pay $70 for one of these, are you willing to pay $10 more to make a controller that looks exactly the way you want it to through the Design Lab program?
Well, yeah, but I mean, I don't know that the Design Lab is giving you the kind of options that you're seeing here, right? Because here we have patterns, we have color gradation. I don't think those are the types of things that you can just get as options through the build your own thing.
That is correct. Yeah. I mean, if you want patterns, and especially if you want camouflage, which I think by now, they must have every type of camouflage covered. They're always releasing different camouflage versions of controller.
Yeah, what would you call this? Winter camouflage?
Or snow? Yeah, I'm not really sure. All right. Well, if you're going to have a camouflage controller, like if you're the person who's going to buy one, you're probably playing games that involve shooting. And there's one game that you're going to be able to play this weekend for free that involves shooting, that if you haven't tried, you really should, because it's a good game and it's free for the weekend. So starting at 12:01 a.m. Pacific on Thursday, February 2nd, all the way through Sunday night, you're going to be able to play Rainbow Six Siege completely free. And then if you love it, or even if you just like it a lot, you're going to be able to buy it for half off. That means $25. This game has been out a little bit more than a year. It's a lot of fun. Like, you have to be into the more hardcore shooter type games, because it's basically like you pick from one of the many classes of real life counterterrorism and law enforcement type things. Like, they've got FBI and my mind is blanking now, but the FBI and like all of the big counterterrorism units from around the world, you know, Russia, United States, France, all those places.
Cool.
And then you do missions that are like counterterrorism type missions, hostage rescue, defusing bombs, that sort of stuff. You have to work as a team. It only takes a couple shots for you to die. And when you die, you don't respawn. So you better do it right. There's team kill. So if your friend tosses a grenade into the room that you're in, you will die. It's stressful and fun, and it's free. So go and check it out. And if you buy it, let me know, because maybe we can play together. Okay, one more very, very quick Xbox story, and that's because we probably talked about this last week.
We did.
And that is new Xbox Live games with gold. But because it's now February, I wanted to quickly mention them. On Xbox One, it's Lovers in a Dangerous Space-Time. It is a really fun game, guys. It's a fun couch co-op game. I described it more last week. Go listen to that. It's free and available now. In the second half of the month, you'll get Project Cars. But the other game that's available right now is the 360 game Monkey Island 2. And then in the second half of the month, you'll get Star Wars The Force Unleashed. So don't forget to go and get your free games, people. They're available now, and there's some good ones this month.
Pull them both down this evening, the two new ones, Monkey Island 2 and Dangerous Space Time.
You know, I say that, but I still haven't downloaded them for free.
It is the first day of the month when we're recording this. So in all fairness, you have a little bit of time.
Yeah, that's true. Although this is the shortest month of the year, people. So don't waste too much time. All right, Richard, let's move on to some other Microsoft news.
Yeah, let's move on to this yet another example of Microsoft naming things poorly. Well, maybe.
Yeah, I would say that if this is the actual name, I would completely agree with you. It looks like Microsoft is going to be announcing something called Windows 10 Cloud. What the crap does that mean, Richard?
It's in the cloud, you know, to the cloud.
So it doesn't run on the computer that I have in my home?
No, it's in the cloud.
How do I use a computer in the cloud?
It's in the cloud. You have a computer, you connect it to the cloud. It's easy. It's in the cloud.
Okay, to the cloud. No, that's not at all what this is, because Microsoft sucks at naming. It is actually what we think, according to Mary Jo Foley, a version of Windows 10. It will only run UWPs, aka apps that you get from the Windows Store. This sounds really familiar, Richard.
Would be really good on? This would be awesome on tablets.
Yeah, let's get some tablets that only run apps from the store. They'll do great. I'll love them. And then they won't do well at all.
And haven't we already tried a tablet-targeted version of the operating system that was poorly named? Didn't we already go through this once?
Yeah, I think we did. Now, to Microsoft's credit, this is what, like 5 years later? Their app store is better. Not great, but better. You don't think it's better? You wouldn't call it better?
It depends on what factors you're judging it. Because while there is more good stuff in there, there's also more absolute crap in there. So I'm not convinced it's gotten better as a whole.
I'm going to say it's better because it has more apps that I would actually want to use.
I can't argue with that statement.
Yeah, it's got a Plex app. It's got CBS News. It's got Tweetium. I don't know. I'm struggling to think of other apps that I use regularly.
Well, I mean, the usual, like Netflix and Hulu and all that other stuff is there as well now, right? So
yeah, that's true. Yeah, so that's all good. It sounds like they're positioning this to be more targeted as a direct competitor to Chromebooks, though. At least that's what Mary Jo Foley was insinuating, which I think would make sense, assuming that the licensing costs are a lot less. Like, that's what makes the Chromebook model work, is they're dirt cheap, and they're dirt cheap because they don't have to pay licensing fees for Windows, primarily. So
yep,
this would make sense at some of the key Chromebook markets, and those would be, well, primarily just education, and that's pretty much only here in the United States. And I think that would be a really good thing. Like, Windows is the most popular operating system, partly due to the fact that most of us geezers grew up using Windows computers at school that had Microsoft Office on them.
Right. Or we had them. I mean, I didn't have a Windows computer in school. I'm older than that, but I had one in my office environment. So I ended up getting one at home.
Right. So that makes sense because Office is available in the Windows Store. So I think that could be good. My daughter talks about using Chromebooks at school all the time, and every time she does, I shudder and die a little bit inside. So if her school was to switch to using Windows 10 Cloud Books, if that's the stupid name they're going to call them, I would be happier.
Yeah, I could see that. I have a theory, and this may be one of those theories where you just have to say, Richard, shut up, you haven't been paying attention. But there's been a lot of talk over the last couple months about how in the future, Windows, and I should say probably Windows containers, would be able to run fully on ARM. For real. Not like the old way, but for real. Is there any possibility that this is what that was about?
There is, because it'd be really easy to release an ARM-based PC and say, well, it primarily runs UWPs. But if it also did this, you know, Win32 on ARM stuff, then that would be cool. And it would make this not nearly as limited as what it sounds like it is. So I'm not going to tell you to shut up.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? I don't know if those two things are intertwined or not. And I know you said that this OS is really only designed for UWPs, but the timing on it and the market that it might hit just kind of strikes me as, well, isn't there a possibility there's some overlap there? So that's something we'll just have to watch and see what happens there.
The one thing that makes me think that that's not what this is I think the main reason that Microsoft would want to push an OS that only runs apps from the store is that they would have an easier time marketing it as a safer and easier to maintain version of Windows. Like, one of the reasons we give kids Chromebooks in schools is because there isn't a huge threat of viruses and malware and all that crap, because it's right. just a browser. So
right.
if it was a version of Windows that only ran stuff from the store, you're not going to get viruses and all that crap on it, probably.
Yep, I would agree with that. And I know this sounds like me saying I told you so to everybody, but Microsoft, oh my God, you give me so much opportunity to do this. It's ridiculous.
I do.
This is what should have come out with Windows 8 for tablets.
That would have been nice. I just don't think there was all ready.
There was no reason whatsoever, except for probably some political maneuvering, that they ever needed to run Win32 apps on a tablet in Windows 8. Never, 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 never necessary. And if they had come out with this, I think that they would have had a far more successful tablet launch than the failure that was Windows RT.
If they would have had everything in place to do that, for sure. But they obviously didn't. They didn't have, you know, a complete way of managing everything that was in the control panel. They didn't have a tablet-based version of the File Explorer. You know, they just didn't have all of that stuff done in time for the Windows 8.0 release.
I would argue that you wouldn't need a lot of that. I mean, when iOS first came out, when Android first came out, they didn't have all of those deep system capabilities. And eventually they started adding things as the community asked for it. And I think the same could have happened for Windows. Anyway, I'll get off my told you so box, but this is the kind of stuff that I look at and I just shake my head. Like, why couldn't you get this right the first time? All right, well, that's probably enough of our Microsoft news. Some stuff's been going on in the industry, though. Some stuff I'm not too happy about.
Interesting. You know, you're teasing this. Why don't you kick this off and tell us what you're not happy about?
Well, it's probably coming as no surprise that I'm not happy at all about the new FCC chairman and the likely positions that he will take as he kind of settles into this office. And as early as the first week of the new administration, the cable lobby was pushing hard for the removal of the set-top box stuff that was included in Tom Wheeler's previous recommendations that still have to come up for a vote to get, I don't know what the right word is, but approved and rolled out and stuff like that. And sure enough, it looks like he's pulled them. The new commissioner, the new chairman, rather, has pulled the set-top box stuff out of the recommendations. And there's always a possibility that someone could raise it and push that they get included again. But at this point, it looks like the recommendations for television and cable, and I forget what all this, what all else this included, they're going to go forward without the accommodations for the kind of set-top boxless environment with, you know, this environment where you'd basically be able to have software instead of hardware from your cable company. I'm so frustrated by this, and I'm not as even fully caught up on where things stand, because everything that I read seems to be like it unsure of whether there is or isn't a chance that this could still happen, or whether it's completely out and there's no chance. Nobody seems to really feel like they're 100% sure on, okay, here's what's next.
So what I wanted to do was to go back and find the episode or episodes where we've talked about these set-top box proposals that the FCC had been talking about over the last couple of years. I didn't have time. I didn't find them. Here's what I remember. And take this as you may, because we all know that my memory is not exactly the greatest. But what I remember is that you were never a huge fan of what had been proposed, because we've seen the types of apps that the cable companies produce, and they're usually not all that great.
Right. Well, but there were steps involved here, right? I was not a huge fan of where Tom Wheeler landed and was kind of forced to compromise. He was forced to compromise on a position that allowed the cable companies, the MSOs, to provide their own software-based apps that could be loaded and used on a common set of set-top boxes that are commercially available, like Roku and Apple TV and stuff like that. What he originally proposed was that the MSOs would have to make their content available through services so that third parties or the cable companies or anyone could create their own experience on top of those content services. And he was basically railroaded out of being allowed to include that.
So if that part of it, which is the part that you were excited about, has been dead for months and months and months, is it all that fair to blame the new guy for getting rid of what's left, which the part that's left isn't really what you wanted?
It wasn't what I wanted, but it put the onus on the cable operators to move away from their hardware requirements. And now, who knows if this will happen?
But I don't think it did. I don't think it did require them to move away from their own hardware boxes. Like, I think the problem that I saw with all of this is, once they said you can just make the apps, like once they got rid of the you have to provide services for other people to make apps, it really just became, well, keep doing what you're doing. You've already got some apps on some platforms, so I guess let's just keep going down that road. It didn't really seem all that different from where we were. And that was actually one of the arguments that the cable companies were making, was that we're already making apps. Like, we're already doing these things that you want us to be doing. Why do we need new regulations? And you and I were arguing, well, your apps kind of suck and they're not everywhere that we want them to be. But if where the FCC had landed was, yeah, but I guess that's pretty much the road that we're going down, does throwing out this proposal really change anything?
I don't know if it does. I feel like, and I know this is bigger government, but I feel as if the MSOs need to be held accountable to provide consumers with the content without holding them hostage the way they do to the hardware that they have. And even, I think, more along with that is the cost of that hardware. Part of what Wheeler was pushing back against was the excruciating costs that people are bearing by renting this hardware. And even this past week, we saw Comcast heavily promote their new set-top boxless solution that you could use on, I believe it's Roku, and have around your home and save money. But the reality is that you don't really save any money with that solution, because they are still requiring you to pay a cloud DVR service fee for every one of the boxes. And the only thing that you're saving is a $2.50 difference between using your box and using their box with services in the cloud. So, you know, in our chat room right now, Rennie's joking about the monopolies. And, well, you know, they're monopolies, but they need help too. But this is the problem. They keep on getting away with this crap. Comcast is making it sound like they're trying to come out with something great for consumers, and it's not a better solution from a financial perspective.
So I have three potential counterpoints to that, but they're all really fast because they're just names of products. DirecTV Now, Sling TV, PlayStation View.
Yeah, and let's just take DirecTV Now off of that list, because everybody I know who has tested it, written about it, used it, has canceled it because they say it's just not up to par.
Sure. But the larger point that I'm making there is, aren't we getting exactly the things that you're wanting from some of these companies already without FCC intervention?
Well, not really exactly, because all of those come heavily encumbered with licensing restrictions that are inconsistently applied across content within the ecosystem. And all that does is add confusion for consumers. We're trying to make this easier for consumers.
Sure, but the same is true with Verizon's app. Can't you only watch some of the Fios stuff when you're at home and some of it is available when you're away? Like, that's not all on the carriers. A lot of that is licensing restrictions pushed down from the content producers.
Yes, absolutely.
Which the FCC can't do anything about.
Yes, I agree with that. That is true. Yes.
All right. Well, I don't really know exactly where we go from here. I think we've probably fairly well made our points, and we'll see what this new FCC decides to do going forward. I think our best guess is that they're going to say, the free market appears to be doing what it needs to move us in directions of apps where we want them and stuff like that. So let's let them do that instead of forcing our own ideas. And we may or may not like that, but I think that's probably the path that we're on for the next 4 years.
I agree. So we'll probably have this conversation again in a year or two when we start seeing the dismantling of any net neutrality security that smaller companies might have had against the MSOs in trying to provide content.
Yep, that's a possibility. Yeah, I think that's a bigger discussion for later, because we don't really know what's going on with that.
Correct.
Okay, but in a similar vein here, we've got this whole six strikes policy. This policy had a real name. I don't remember what it was called. I don't think anybody actually remembers what it was called. But the idea was that the content producers of the world were out there on the internet watching to see who was pirating their stuff. And when they did that, they would send a notice to those pirates' ISPs. Those ISPs would then pass those notices on down to the pirateurs. And after six offenses, something bad would happen. And that's about what it was. Like, they threatened things like slower internet, no internet, things like that. They're giving up on this. The MPAA, the RIAA, they're giving up. They're saying they're done with this because it's not working. Basically, they've said that a significant number of users who received the alerts did actually stop pirating. I don't know that I believe that. I think those people might have just found ways to not get caught pirating. And then the hardcore repeat offenders, they figured out that this was a completely toothless proposal. And they could keep pirating all they wanted and nothing would happen. And so they did. And this thing did nothing except maybe scare some people.
Well, and more importantly, during the time that this was in place with specific providers, those providers saw an increase in piracy overall.
Yeah. Yep. Now, we should make this clear, Richard. You and I do not condone piracy.
That is correct. That is correct. But it has long been asserted by people who know anything about technology and who know anything about how the industry works that it is not your at-home pirater who's trying to just see the version of the film that he can't buy yet or she can't download yet, and not those people who are causing the industry harm right now. It is the people who are mass producing content and selling it and making it available on the streets and distributing it broadly. That's where the real pain is. And ironically, half of the biggest movie leaks that we've had have come from industry insiders themselves through previewers.
Yep. Yeah, that's true. Either way, it's not right, and people should stop doing it. Don't steal movies.
Man, we should have more content in the industry section that I get to rant about. I needed a good rant today.
You did. I'm glad we both got a little bit of that in. All right, so that's it for our news this week, Richard. Let's get into what's been going on in your entertainment center. Hopefully it's less ranty and more peaceful, and that you've been able to just enjoy quality content and not have to worry about fixing things.
It is less ranty. I will kind of backtrack a little bit on one of the things that I said last week. I'm not convinced that my Amazon Video is in 4K either, Josh.
Uh-oh. Do you have a device? Like, does your TV tell you what resolution it's playing things in?
Well, I don't think so. I could check for that. I don't know how to do it now. What it does is it upscales everything. So everything looks great on the television, right? Mm. But probably not as it could. And just like you said, shows that I know are available in 4K, shows like Transparent and shows like Man in the High Castle that are originals from Amazon and have been available in 4K as soon as they rolled out 4K, don't say anything about 4K. They say they're 5.1. They say they're HD. They don't say anything about 4K. Mm. And this is the app that's on my TV. So now I'm thinking that even though I got this app update too, that I still don't have the version that can play the latest, highest quality video. And that's crazy.
Yeah, that stinks.
So I have to hope and imagine that we will see those apps at some point. And given that the Xbox One S is a 4K device, very, very specifically, that we'll see a 4K version of the Amazon app there too at some point. All right. Well, I wanted to mention something about the Plex DVR service over the past couple of weeks, and I kept forgetting to mention it. I don't know if you're using Plex DVR much anymore, Josh, but for me, around the holidays, the Plex DVR was unable to load any program info. It would tell me that I had no program guide, and then I would refresh it, and it would count to 100% over the course of like an hour.
Yeah, it's slow.
And then there'd be nothing there.
Hmm. I don't think I ever had this problem.
And I went on the forums and I saw lots of people reporting the same sort of thing. I don't know that we ever got an answer they knew what was causing it, but that problem now seems to be fixed and my DVR is now automatically updating again, which is a good thing. What isn't a good thing is that stuff isn't recording.
Oh.
And I don't know why. And this is particularly problematic for me because I have this pretty much as my primary DVR now.
Oh, that's an even bigger problem than I expected.
So I need to do a little bit more research and find out what's going on here. I was having problems with things not recording before. Again, something that many people in the forums had reported. They don't really give you any explanation as to why something doesn't record. It just doesn't record. And it said that there was a failure. So I'm hoping that we get a little bit more information in the near future to find out what's going on there. So for those recordings that I've missed, I've been using my Play on Cloud subscription to just quickly record them and be able to pull them down and watch them when I have time. Stuff that I haven't had time to necessarily watch yet. Now, something that I took on this past weekend, because, you know, I need a project, right? I needed a new project.
Yeah, definitely.
Not like I have things to do or shows to edit, but I needed a new project. So I decided that it was time for me to finish, because I started it a year ago, migrating my music library from my old home server to my, I guess it's kind of silly to call it my new home server, because A, it's Windows Home Server 2011, and B, I installed it over a year ago. But I lost Steam. It was just like with the movies and TV library. I lost Steam migrating all my music over because it's entailed. It's not just as simple as, oh, just drag the files over. I need to spend some time cleaning up metadata. There were some things that I needed to either re-rip because they weren't available for matching in my matching service, or and the versions that I had were really old so that they didn't sound anywhere near as good as the rest of the content in my library. And so it was entailed. And I finally finished that. And so my library now has, I think it's 20,000 songs or something like that, which I guess isn't huge, but it's sizable.
Yeah.
And I kind of forgot like all the music that I had that I really like. And everybody says, oh, well, you have anything that you want out on Spotify. And that's great. You know, random access to everything is great. But the problem is I forget what the things are that I bought because I liked.
Yeah, that's true.
So to me, it's still kind of important to have that personal music library. And now it's matched on my iTunes Match account. And so that's across all my devices. And that means that I can now pretty much play any song that I want to in my library, in my car as well, which is nice, even though it's in the cloud. It's something that I really needed to do. And you said, but wait a minute, I thought you said that you put it on your Windows home server. I did, but you may remember that I use iHome server with my Windows home server, which allows you basically to create an iTunes library, a much smarter iTunes library than iTunes can give you. But it creates an iTunes library that is then synced between iTunes and your Windows Media content, and it makes it available to basically stream anywhere through your network. So pretty good system. I finally have that all together. And I brought all of that stuff over into Sonos as well. So everything now has all my music, and I'm happy for now. I'm sure I'll find something wrong with it. But, you know, this got me thinking. I think it would be worth us talking at greater length sometime, Josh, about, and maybe have a guest on that would have a particular perspective about this too, just about your personal music libraries and how we're handling personal music libraries right now. Because my setup's pretty complicated, but it's also pretty powerful. And I'd be curious to find out what you're doing and, you know, maybe what a couple other people are doing too. Like maybe get Chris on or someone else from the DMZ to kind of figure out how they're handling their music libraries.
Yeah.
Now, I mentioned that I've been backing up my TV series stuff to my Drobo, and I'm still working on that. That's going to be a long project. So that continues. And then on the watching front, not a ton of stuff. I am keeping up with Justified to be able to keep up with the discussion on Court Killers. I have been able to keep up with all of the usual shows that I watch, like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Homeland, Nashville, Sleepy Hollow, This Is Us, New Girl, This Is Us. Oh, This Is Us. Are you up to date on This Is Us?
Not even close.
Oh, so good. This last episode, so good. It crushed me. It was It answered questions I wasn't ready to hear the answers to yet. It was so good. And also spent some time getting caught up on Modern Family because somehow I got behind on that. So I'm pretty much up to date on all of the TV stuff that I've been watching. And that's it for me.
Okay. Well, I will update you on all the TV stuff I've been watching. None. Pretty sure none in the last week. In terms of gaming, the only thing worth talking about is a game called Towerfall Ascension. And I'm bringing this up because, well, for two reasons, because I played it and I liked it. And it's out now this week on the Xbox One. Maybe it was last week, but I think this week. It's a $15 indie game. It's basically like a 16-bit graphic style where it's up to four players, I think. And you have four, like everybody plays as an archer. You've got a bow and arrow. And I think it starts with like three arrows. And it's just try to kill the other people. But it's all 2D, one screen. Think basically like original Mario Brothers, but it's four people on screen at once. If you jump on someone's head, they die. If you shoot them with an arrow, they die. If you shoot your arrow, you lose it. It sticks in the wall. You have to go pick it up to get more arrows. And then there's crazy power-ups and stuff. It's a lot of fun with some friends. It's a great couch co-op game. I did not actually play the Xbox One version of this. A coworker friend of mine said, hey, I own this game on PC, and it just came out on Xbox. Why don't we all play it at lunch one day? And we did, and we had a blast. So check out Towerfall Ascension if that sounds fun to you. And then the other thing that I did in my entertainment center is the NVIDIA Shield TV got their big software update last week. So that's the update to the latest version of Android. That means nice. It's got Amazon Video on it, finally, and some other little things like that. So I decided that I would take this as an opportunity to completely redo what I was doing with my Shield. So what I had done previously was taken my 4 terabyte external hard drive and formatted that as internal storage, which meant that it needed to be there. It treated it like it was internal storage, exactly what it sounds like. And that allowed everything that I wanted to do mostly to work. The HD Home Run DVR would write to it. The Plex DVR would write to the external drive. And I was able to connect to that drive via like Windows file network sharing sort of thing and copy new movies that I'd ripped over the network straight to it. That was the big thing. I didn't want to have to like unplug the drive and carry it over to my PC and copy things over that way. Like that's like, I know it's not that big of a deal, but it's burdensome. You know, it's annoying to have to move drives all over the place just to copy things because then you're worried, you know, do I have to restart the Shield while I'm doing this? Like, what if someone wants to watch something while I'm doing this? Like, it's kind of a pain. Didn't want to do that. But I was also having some weird issues that I thought were maybe related to it being internal storage. Like, a lot of times, HD Home Run DVR, if it went to record, it would kind of like crash everything, like everything on the Shield. So I kind of stopped using the HD Home Run DVR for a little while I was trying to figure that out. I decided, forget all that. It sounds like with the new version of Android on this thing that I can do the file sharing, even if it's an external drive. Let's start over. And by starting over, that means that drive, because it was internal storage, needed to be formatted. Now, fortunately, I had all of those movies and all that stuff on another drive. Didn't really lose anything here, but it meant formatting the drive, recopying like 3 terabytes of data from one drive to another drive all over USB, set up the Shield from scratch, set up HD Home Run DVR from scratch, set up the new Plex server from scratch, but it's all going pretty smoothly. I haven't really done the Plex DVR stuff on it yet. I figured let's take a little bit more reasoned approach to it this time. Let's try with just the HD Home Run DVR and see how that works. Because it did seem to work pretty well last time until I started messing around with internal storage. It's working out really well. It's working out great. And then because my Plex server is on that same machine, I can easily tell Plex, oh yeah, this folder where all of my HD home run DVR recordings are, toss those in the TV library also. So it's kind of the same thing. Like, you get the same net result in that all of your recorded TV ends up in your Plex library, which is great. And because the HD home run DVR stuff, all of their client apps actually support scheduling recordings and all that stuff. I can do that from any of the apps on my phone or my Xbox or the Shield or whatever. So that's actually been working out really well. The Plex, all the rest of the Plexi stuff to Plex has been working out really well. Honestly, the rest of it, I don't really care that much about. I'm not going to use my Shield to watch Netflix and all that stuff. That's what my Xbox is for. I'm not switching inputs on my TV, and my family is definitely not switching inputs on the TV to try to watch Netflix from a different box. It's not happening.
So how about Amazon? I mean, is there a possibility that you have 4K Amazon content on that device?
I almost definitely do, but I'm the only one who would care. Like, Jen and the girls don't care if
right.
their Amazon content is in 4K or not. So,
right, I know. I still walk into the family room and see SD content that's letterboxed, and it makes me insane.
Oh, yeah. I think I've mostly gotten rid of that crap. Because, yeah, that drives me insane, too.
I want to just delete the channels.
Oh, yeah, that's what I did in Media Center. SD, nope, not in the guide anymore. Sorry. Hey, what happened to that channel? Oh, I guess the cable company must have dropped it. I don't know. I don't think it was ever actually that bad. I think we had HD versions of everything. But anyway, so that's going pretty well. I mentioned this a little bit earlier. I wanted to point out something that I figured out with Plex. So, and that I want to share this with everybody else as a little bit of a tip for my kids, and especially the youngest kid, the one who's actually turning 4 tomorrow. She watches, like, if she's actually watching like a regular TV show and not just stupid news nursery rhyme videos on YouTube, you know, she's just watching, say, Daniel Tiger. And I've got a bazillion episodes of that recorded. But in Plex, if you just go to TV shows, sometimes it can be a little bit confusing to figure out, like, well, which one does she want? And because if you just go to TV shows, it wants to show you, like, what's the next one to watch or what's the most recently added ones. If you're 3, you don't care about that. And you're right. going to throw a fit about that. You want to pick the episode that you want to watch. And maybe it's the one that you just watched the previous 4 times.
Right.
So if you're the mom who's dealing with that, that gets really frustrating. And then the other thing is, that when you're going through the regular library, it's not just going to autoplay the next episode. When you've got a 3-year-old who's going to watch an episode or two so that you can get some crap done around the house, having it autoplay the next episode, really nice feature.
Yeah.
Here's the solution to all of this. I'm so glad this worked. It basically saved my life from Jen murdering me. So what you can do is create a playlist in Plex. And so what I did was just said, make a Daniel Tiger playlist. It's got 4 seasons worth of Daniel Tiger in that playlist. It becomes another menu option on the far left menu on the home screen. And it's the first one. You click playlist. It shows you all of your playlist. You pick the Daniel Tiger one. And then it just has a big list of every single episode. Your 3-year-old can say, I want that one. You put that one on and then it plays. And then it plays the next one. And there's peace and harmony and people get stuff done in the house and there's no screaming and I don't get choked. So playlists are the solution that you're all looking for. Check it out because it's really nice and it's really easy to set up. I never thought I'd need video playlist. You need video playlist.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So that's it for me.
All right, cool. Well, before we get out of here, I want to let people know that I'm actually going to be on Home Improvement USA. It is a syndicated radio show it's been around for like over 20 years now.
Holy cow.
I'm going to be talking about getting started with home automation tech if you are renovating your home. So maybe interesting. And if you don't get that somewhere in your area, never fear, because all of this stuff is online now, right? And you can actually go to KWW Radio, where they have 24 hours a day playing home improvement shows from the radio and other sources. And I will have a link to that in the show notes if you're interested.
Awesome. That's very cool. I'll have to check that out. Well, the episode that you're on. I'm not sure I could listen to 24 hours of home improvement radio. But home improvement with home automation sounds really cool. And they've got themselves an expert on it to help them talk about that stuff. Cool. All right. Well, if you want to get a hold of us, there's lots of ways you can do that. We're on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. And the website is at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone. We're also on Facebook, facebook.com/theDMZ. We've got an email address. It's entertainment20 at thedigitalmediazone.com. And we've also got other podcasts for you to check out and subscribe to for sure. Other than this, we've got Richard's other show, Home On, covering home automation stuff, because like I just said, he's an expert in that area. And once you're done subscribing to these shows, what you could also do, if you've got just a couple more minutes, go into iTunes, leave a rating, leave a review. It helps us out a ton, guys. We really, really appreciate it when you can do that for us. If you're not an iTunes user, there's other places you can find our shows. We're on Pocket Cast, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, pretty much any place you can find podcasts. You can probably find Entertainment 2.0 and Home On. Subscribe, leave a rating. We'll love you forever. And you'll be our close friends, just like Joe. Then come back, listen to us live as we're recording the show, like Rennie and a couple of other people did tonight. You can chat along with us, get your input into the show while we're recording it. That's pretty awesome. Follow us on Twitter to find out for sure when that's going to be. It's usually Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, which I don't even know what time that is in Australia, but Rennie's here listening live from Australia at like, it's probably like 4:30 in the morning on Saturday in Australia, and he's here, and you should be too. So follow us on Twitter to know for sure when that's going to be, because we love having you guys here. So that's going to do it for episode 396. I'm Josh Pollard. He's Richard Gunther, and we'll be back next time for episode 397. Until then, adios.
Bye.